As established PE behemoths capture an ever-growing share of capital allocations, is there any hope for plucky new funds on the block? How can emerging managers entice prospective LPs to back them? What level of support do new GPs need? And what practical considerations can be overlooked? We talk all things first-time funds with fund admin specialist JTC in this episode of the Unquote Private Equity Podcast.
Hello, listeners, and a very warm welcome to this latest episode of the Unquote Private Equity Podcast. I am Greg Gilles, the editor of Unquote, and I will be your host today. This episode is brought to you by JTC. JTC is a publicly listed global professional services business with deep expertise in fund, corporate, and private client services. The company was founded in 1987 and has grown to have a global presence, employing 1,200 staff and reaching assets under administration of $180 billion. We'll be speaking to Vincent van den Brink and Greg Koch, who are both based in Luxembourg. JTC's Luxembourg office offers fund administration, corporate administration, third-party AIFM, depository and transfer agency services for clients across the continent and worldwide. This week, we're going to talk all things first-time funds. There have certainly been some incredible success stories with debut managers in the past few years, but by and large, the consensus is that they have faced an uphill battle at times, as LPs have gravitated towards name brands and deploying bigger tickets with existing relationships to meet allocation targets. And that's before we even talk of the impact of the pandemic on developing said relationships. To see how recent months have impacted that dynamic, I'm going to turn to my esteemed guests. Greg, Vincent, a pleasure to have you joining the podcast this week. So first of all, gentlemen, could you introduce yourselves in a bit more detail for our listeners?
Certainly. So this is Greg speaking. I will go first. As Greg said, I am the group head of AIFM or Management Company Services for JTC, essentially meaning that the management company product is part of my overall remit. We have a global management company platform where we operate licensed and regulated AIFM and ManCo businesses out of a number of jurisdictions, all of whom ultimately filter up to me.
Thank you very much, Greg. And what about you, Vincent?
Yes, so I'm Vincent. I am a commercial director here for JTC in Luxembourg with a main focus on business development, but also onboarding of clients with a focus on real estate, private equity, venture capital, infrastructure, and debt-related funds. And I basically help them to navigate through the setup of their fund structures here in Luxembourg. So that's a bit me in a nutshell.
Excellent. Thank you very much to you both. And again, welcome to the podcast. So I think we'll get straight into it. As I mentioned earlier, a big theme over the past couple of years for us on the editorial side anyway, has been how a handful of established GPs have acted as sort of big magnets for large amounts of capital. And there were signs that emerging managers were struggling perhaps to get their foot in the door with LPs. And that was even before the pandemic. So I guess what's interesting from our perspective is how have you seen the situation evolve in the last year? Do you think things have gotten better for debut managers? Do you think things have gotten worse? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think what we see, or at least what I have seen, is that indeed COVID has made it harder for limited partners to invest in emerging fund managers. But in general, if I look at our book of business, we have seen managers or first-time managers to find very creative solutions for fundraising, especially for their new first funds. But indeed, we have seen managers also struggling with fundraising, even to find enough money to do the first closing. I think what we have seen is that the investors takes more time to do their due diligence and to select the funds they invest in very carefully. I think what also makes it much more difficult for first-time fund managers to raise capital is the current travel ban around the world, unable to see the investors directly, but also the LPs are unable to perform their on-site due diligence on their managers. I think everything needs to happen virtually, which is still not ideal. So I think what we see as a general note is that if LPs invest in first-time fund managers, they want to get a kind of discount, or they want to have the possibility to do co-investment with them. And sometimes even we see that the larger LPs demand a lower management fee. I think that, I don't know, Greg, if you have anything to add to that part.
Yeah, just a couple of additional thoughts on this. You know, I think Vincent's comments are, you know, well put in general terms. A couple of exceptions to this really that are asset class specific and relate directly to opportunities, I think, that that managers have found during the lockdown period. You know, one in particular in the early part of the COVID pandemic was we saw a surge in the private debt space. Now that's subsequently sort of tapered off a little bit. But one other one, which is really noteworthy, is managers that either target impact investments or have a strong ESG theme to their strategy. By the very nature of these fund managers, they are emerging. And so, you know, they are all essentially, you know, first-time fund managers. And we've seen, a lot of them have significant success over the last year or so in the build-up to the SFDR as well, and just a general market theme towards ESG.
Absolutely. And that's actually brings me quite neatly to another question that I had for you, which is to what extent do you think market dynamics should theoretically make it easier for managers to start their own firms, you know, compared to, say, a decade ago? Because obviously you've just mentioned a few specific strategies that have really boomed in recent years and even recent month, even on the back of the pandemic, as you said. So my take would be that there should be plenty of opportunities for new people to come in into this space. But conversely, do you think there are still high barriers to entry with the regards to, you know, the fundraising model, the constraint of fundraising, and the way that private equity allocation currently works in the market that make it more of an uphill battle?
It's an interesting question, because there are, you know, in some ways the market dynamics are improving, you know, for fund managers generally in terms of raising, you know, capital. And by that I mean, you know, from a regulatory point of view, you now have the opportunity to use third-party AIFM businesses such as the one we have at JTC, and gain access to European and other markets in a much, you know, easier, you know, manner. These AIFMs also, you know, support the fundraising efforts, you know, of these managers and sort of guide them through the initial processes of dealing with marketing in multiple jurisdictions. That is, in relation to something like the national private placement regime, is a much more streamlined approach towards, you know, fundraising. If I look at this the other way, though, as the flip side to that coin is, there is an increasing amount of regulation around the area of marketing and distribution at a European level. So we do see that, and it is something that first-time managers, particularly those that are not European, based managers, really struggle to come to terms with. Okay. So we'll have to wait and see how these dynamics work themselves out. Vincent?
Yeah, no, I think to add what is always important for the unreasonable barriers to entry, I think what is very important and what we always suggest to all our clients and prospective clients is at least have a discussion with the lawyers, choosing the right jurisdiction, choosing the right regulatory approach, and indeed make clear how you would like to market or distribute your funds. Like what Greg said, is whether or not you want to use the national private placement rules or whether indeed the third-party AFM would make most sense. And I think in general, what we at JTC have very fast experience with hand-holding first-time fund managers and explaining and navigating them through the sometimes complex regulatory field here in Luxembourg, and just to make sure that they set up the fund in an efficient manner.
Absolutely. That makes sense. I think we'll come back to that a little bit later as well when it comes to the extent of advice that you provide to first-time managers. I just wanted to flip to the other side of the equation for a second and get your thoughts on the sort of the LP side of things. Some market participants sometimes, especially if they tend to be invested in first-time funds and see the benefits, suggest that there could be more education maybe among LPs for investing in first-time funds. Do you think that's the case? Do you think there's a lot of people not investing in this space or in this type of GP, perhaps out of not being used to it or not understanding the benefits? Do you encounter that, and how would you kind of solve that problem?
So let me jump in. So we do see that most new or debut managers communicate very well with their LPs. Mm. And so when you talk about education of the LPs, I think that it can happen at two levels. One is from the GPs or managers themselves in guiding their LPs through the initial investment process. The other, frankly, is the service providers. And this is where, for me, I think you gain a significant benefit by dealing with a multi-service provider that can give advice and guidance to these LPs, across the spectrum of issues that are faced in a first-time investment in an emerging manager.
Exactly. Indeed, I agree with you, Greg. I think it's also the role, in a way, of a service provider, together, of course, with the first-time fund manager, is to educate the LPs in a way, but also definitely to make sure that the LPs get what they expect to receive from the first-time fund managers in terms of reporting, but also to explain them how the onboarding would work to add them or to admit them to the fund that they're planning to set up.
Absolutely, that totally makes sense. And I think when it comes to that issue of communication, when you speak to debut managers, either just at a prospective stage, or indeed when they are your clients, to what extent do you find that they need support in managing communications with LPs? It, obviously at the fundraising stage for sure, but even beyond that, and obviously that's been increasingly important in recent years, and perhaps one could think that one of the reasons why name brands and multi-strategy managers have done so well in the current fundraising environment is because they have that lockdown. They've got dedicated IR functions. They're very on top of the reporting, of the communication, which could be perhaps not the case with the debut managers. To what extent do you have to do a lot of work with first-time funds in that area?
I think I think most of the first-time managers are very well capable of communicating with their LPs, and we think, or at least what we see with our own clients' funds, is that their LPs are key for them. So it's very important for them that they do the communication with the LP, and we merely support the first-time fund managers from an operational perspective. So really, like as I mentioned before, is make sure that the LP gets the report, but also to explain the first-time fund manager on how we do our investor onboarding and the way how we would communicate with their investor. But the overall relationship with such an LP would lay with the first-time fund manager. Mm-hmm. But of course, sometimes we see that the LPs ask questions to us as service provider just to make sure that everything happens as smooth as possible.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think the overwhelming experience we have is that the GPs absolutely know their asset class and in most cases have quite good relationships already established with many of the LPs, which they guard quite closely, and so they should. One thing I would add on this though is where I do see us providing support is in sort of educating the GPs on the marketing versus pre-marketing question. In other words, okay, when are they able to fully communicate and fully market a fund to their LPs versus when is it important that they are not sharing too much information to fall into some kind of unwanted regulatory trap?
I see. Is there sometimes a bit of over eagerness to sort of promote the new firm and the new fund? Do you think people will get a little bit too enthusiastic?
Well, I think GPs are always, very interested in lining up their LPs very early on, as soon as they can. They want to do that, and if they can do that in the lead up to a fund launch, even in a soft way, they would do that. The trouble is with the marketing laws, you have to be careful sometimes, not to be seen as, fully marketing a fund that's not been fully registered with the relevant regulatory authority.
Yes, and I also think to add on, not only from a marketing perspective, but in general, is that not so much on the LP side, but it's to educate the first-time fund managers in a way explain them how they or what they can communicate to the LPs and what not, or how they should proceed. For example, if they want to make an investment or they want to seek approval from the investors, we need to always make sure that all regulatory and governance point of views has been taken into consideration. So it's also, I think, up to us as a service provider in a way is educating the first-time fund managers and to make sure that the LPs in a way are satisfied with the information they're getting from the manager.
Absolutely. And to pivot to another area of service, and you've mentioned that earlier on, one of the earlier questions, the issue of domiciliation, and which therefore I assume is something that you broach as a fairly standard approach with new clients or even repeat clients, really, when they set up a new fund. What sort of advice would you give? Would you give any advice, really, to debut managers on where they should domicile their funds? Is that something that tends to come up from them fairly often in terms of an area of advice they're looking for? And if we're looking at the current environment, what are sort of the top considerations that you would look at to help them decide where they're going to be domiciled?
Yeah, I think the choice of domiciling their fund is in a way not up to us. We can always provide suggestions, but often what we see is that first-time fund managers reach out to their legal or tax counsel to discuss the structure. But I think what is very important is the domicile of the fund, because some investors, and then again you end up with the LPs, have certain preference for certain jurisdictions. So it does not only start what is the preference of the GP to have their fund in, but also what is the preference of future LPs in order to avoid that some jurisdiction might be perceived as, let's call it wrong jurisdictions.
Okay.
Yeah. In most cases, when we engage in initial conversations with GPs, they have at the very least done their own homework on domicile already and drawn some early stage conclusions, or in other cases they've already engaged legal counsel that have advised them on what the appropriate domicile for their fund is from a practical, even tax efficiency point of view.
And for us as JTC, it does not really matter, because we can assist our clients or prospective clients throughout most fund jurisdictions in the world. So we always try to find a solution which is most efficient and effective for our clients.
Absolutely. Another area, perhaps, of advice that you could provide, and I think that goes more towards the long term. And again, one of the big trend, obviously, we've seen for debut funds is that no fund is truly a first-time fund, if you know what I mean. Very often it will be people spinning out from established funds and perhaps thinking of that process, you know, fairly early on in their career, having an eye on launching their own firm and raising their own first-time funds. If you were talking to a young, you know, PE exec that was thinking of one day starting his or her own firm, what are some actions you think they can take over the career to facilitate that process and to build, you know, a track record and experience that will help them do that?
Yeah, I think track record is obviously very important from a fundraising point of view. I would say, for somebody to gain experience, with as many LPs as possible and build those relationships, that is important. But moreover, I would say my most sincere advice to anybody starting out, on the PE journey, would be to get, really spend time understanding the more operational or regulatory side of the business, because when it comes to setting up their first fund, those are typically the areas that are going to slow things down and really frustrate them, if they don't have that background experience in those areas.
Yeah, I think it's what you already mentioned before, is that often they're in the larger PE firms and they do a spin out and they have been focusing mainly all their life on portfolio management, and then suddenly they get a lot of other tasks, legal, tax, regulatory, governance items on their plate. So I think it's very important if they want to set up their own fund once, is to get very broad experience and understanding of the regulatory framework here in Europe. But so again, I think my advice would be is to find yourself a very good and trustworthy service provider and legal counsel that will be able to assist you. And I think what we see again in our book of business is that most first-time fund managers, first, they start small by building up a track record, doing some co-investment deals with some other LPs. And then they, if that all goes successful, they will start launching their so-called first fund.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes the devil is in the unglamorous detail, and either you need to pay attention to that early on, or indeed, as you said, start working with people whose job it is to actually support you in that. And I think, I mean, obviously throughout this, you've made a fairly convincing case as to why people can use a fund administrator to help. But maybe you have, some more kind of top level reasons why you think people should do that. Something else as well I wanted to bring to you, and that's testing your pitch a little bit here and maybe playing devil's advocate. When you do encounter GPs that decide against using a fund administrator, what are the reasons they would provide, and how do you respond to that? How do you pivot to actually bringing out the reasons why they should?
Yeah, maybe I'll have a first stab at this one. It's interesting because these first time fund managers, most of them, have the belief in most instances that they can handle fund operations themselves. And in most cases, that's a naive, sort of viewpoint, because they, they've never had exposure to the nitty gritty stuff. And so make the mistake of thinking that it's easier than it really is. So that's reason number one, is they think they can do it themselves. The other reason, of course, is sensitivity to cost. These first-time fund managers, their imperative, is really to keep, their first fund as lean as possible. And so they are price sensitive, and oftentimes get sticker shock when they get the sort of fee proposals that come along with all of the vast sort of array of administrative services. And then, I would say the other one that I would mention is that is where, there's not a requirement from an investor point of view for either the heavy sort of oversight and regulation that's associated with an AIFM or management company. So there's no driving force, behind the GP you know, pushing him in the direction of a fund administration services. So those are my thoughts, but perhaps Vincent, you had something more.
Yeah, I think I would look at the pros of using a fund administrator in a way like ourselves is, of course, peace of mind, governance, experience, but also knowledge of local rules and regulations, whether or not that could be AML, KYC on the investor onboarding side, or at the level of the AFM is having dedicated investment committee experience, or whether or not it's from a depository point of view where we assist some of our clients as well. So I think using a service provider can make the life of a small asset manager much easier, so they can focus on what they're good at, portfolio management or fundraising, and all back office related work can be taken care of by JTC. So far, at least what we have seen with our clients is that is that's very much appreciated.
Excellent. Yeah, maybe I can just add something to this. You know, I think that fund managers that simply see the administrative services as a necessary evil, you know, it's very difficult to convince them, that they need to spend money on the services that they can't do them themselves. That's a difficult, question. So what we tend to focus on is adding value. The belief that, in each of our service lines, whether it's AFM depository or central fund admin services, we're actually adding value to the clients, that we have, technical expertise that we can really, use to, good advantage for our clients themselves, that we're able to assist them in many different ways that they, in most cases themselves have not even thought of before. And so you asked, how we turn around the conversation is really to focus on that value add proposition.
Absolutely, and leave them to focus on the LPs and the strategy and actually marketing their fund, which absolutely makes sense. I'm afraid we're going to need to wrap this up, gentlemen. Thank you very much to you both for sharing your thoughts on this, and I'm sure we'll catch up some of the time as well.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. We will be back soon with a fresh episode, so in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And you can keep an eye out for new episodes on Uncle.com, of course. See you soon.